Good afternoon once again. It may be morning where you are, or it might be evening, but either way, this is Fresh Black Coffee. I'm Eddie Huff with my engineer and assistant, Julian. We'll divulge his last name one day, but right now he's just Julian. By the way, I have to say this. This is amazing. I think the future's still in good hands. My engineer, by the way, is 14 years old and a freshman in high school, excuse me, Julian. He just moved to this sophomore year. In any event, no, he's really good, and I'm so thankful to have him working with me on this project, the reboot of Fresh Black Coffee. Hopefully, this Fresh Black Coffee will wake you up a little bit and wake others up, because our nation needs to be awakened. Sometimes I picture myself grabbing our nation and so many people by the collar and just smacking them back and forth. You know, you remember the old movies where somebody would freak out and then you would hear somebody would grab them and start smacking, get a hold of yourself. In fact, the best example of this was the movie Airplane. Any of those of you who saw the first movie Airplane, in which everybody on the airplane started smacking this person around. They were lining up, and it just got out of hand. But anyway, that's kind of what I picture myself doing to our nation and certain people in particular. Anyway, I would like to start with one of my favorites of late is the Babylon Bee. For those of you that are on Facebook and my Facebook friends, you'll know that I tend to repost articles and stories from the Babylon Bee. Babylon Bee, by the way, is a satire site, just so you know. And it's a conservative or Christian version of The Onion, which is also a satire site. But anyway, I love this one. I just ran across this one, and the title in itself just makes so much sense. But just let me read this, and I'll read the whole thing for you. But it says, "A fetus is just a clump of cells, says a slightly older, larger clump of cells." June 4th, 2021, Babylon Bee, Cedar Hills, Oregon. While discussing the hot-button issue of abortion with a friend over coffee on Friday, a local woman, Cindy Carson, claimed a fetus is just a clump of cells, despite herself being just a slightly older, larger, and more organized clump of cells. "A fetus is just like a collection of cells or whatever," said the woman, who also made up a collection of cells. "It's just like biology, you know." Her friend, also a clump of cells, agreed. "Yeah, it's just a bunch of cells collected and organized together or whatever." The bunch of cells then asked the barista, who was also a reportedly large clump of cells, for another cup of coffee. Carson nodded. "Yeah, it's just like this thing that's absolutely dependent on the mother. Sorry, birthing person." She said this despite herself being totally dependent on other people for her existence, from her own mom when she was born to her parents when she was being raised, to other people in her community now that she has grown, not to mention the God of the universe whom she is dependent on for every breath she takes. "Yeah, it's just like a parasite," she said to the woman, who is also a parasite. At publishing time, sources had confirmed that Carson was actually slightly mistaken. She was a soul created by God and therefore had infinite worth, just like the tiny clump of cells she was discussing. So anyway, the Babylon Bee, like I said, it's probably my favorite site to go to every day, just for inspiration, to laugh at the stupidity of the world, all the way to revealing deep truth like the end of that last little piece they had in there. So anyway, I just thought I'd share that with you. Those of you that aren't familiar with the site, it's just Babylon Bee, the BabylonBee.com. Another story that's kind of funny, you've been seeing this, they're trying everything now to get everyone to take the vaccine, the COVID vaccine. And one of those is that I just came across, the state of West Virginia. So West Virginians now who get the COVID-19 vaccine will be entered into a drawing to win prizes, including custom firearms, and $1 million, the governor, Jim Justice, announced Tuesday in the latest initiative by the state government to boost the efforts to get everyone vaccinated. So they're having issues, but what they're, you know, because West Virginia is very much a hunting state and people that really believe in the Second Amendment, they thought they'd throw in their guns. And so West Virginians who get the COVID vaccine will be entered into a drawing to win prizes, including the firearms plus $1 million. And it's an initiative to boost inoculation efforts. So the Father's Day on June 20th will mark the first of a series of weekly drawings, and it goes all the way to August. The Republican governor told everyone this during a briefing. To be eligible, you have to get your first shot, at least your first shot. And then when I start through these prizes, they're going to be a run on people getting their first shot. So go get them. Go get them so you'll be eligible where we can draw your name. And absolutely, you could win something that would be phenomenal. So they're doing everything they can to get people inoculated. According to data, West Virginia right now has about 51% inoculated. So 51.1% of the residents of the state of West Virginia have received at least one of the doses. And that actually exceeds the national average of 50.5%. Now, I don't know. I just have a feeling that we're going to see some lawsuits pop up on the whole issue eventually as we see side effects that haven't been made till now. But I leave it up to individuals. Just please, this is me. Like the Apostle Paul said, this is me and not the Lord, you know, okay? So this is just Eddie. This is not anything science. It's not the science. It's not the word of God. It's just the word of Eddie Huff. But I've always had this suspicion that this may be tied to birth control. So I always advise people, if you're beyond birthing years, go ahead and get the shot, okay? Get the shot. But if you haven't had children yet or you know, cause children to be born, then I would wait. I would be a little bit hesitant because I just have this sneaking suspicion. And here's what makes me suspicious. Bill Gates is behind all of this. Bill and Melinda Gates, and well, the former Melinda Gates, I guess. Well, she'll still be Melinda, but she won't be his wife. But they've been really into the zero population growth, ZPG. When I was in college in the late 60s there, in early 70s, ZPG was a big thing, zero population growth. It was a huge thing. They felt that we have too many people, and eventually too many people are going to kill the planet and all of this. So they were working on, abortion had not yet been legalized. So they wanted to control the population, and they were trying to get everyone down, kind of like China, where you were only allowed to have two children, and those had to be generally boys. They were actually aborting girls, and I think, as I understand, killing girls that were born. So the whole zero population thing is a big thing, that too many people on the earth were going to rape the earth and kill it. And so we needed to control the population. So I don't know. And particularly also they want to give these inoculations in India and Africa, and these are very highly populated places. Therefore, they're, I believe, trying to control the population. We're going to give them the vaccine for free. It's interesting, though, China, who had that two-child policy, now is starting to say, okay, we now need three. I think they're realizing that you can't run a socialistic nation by not having enough people to feed the kitty. So you've got to have people that are making money to pay money into the coffers through taxes and through purchasing power and so forth to keep the social benefits going. And that's where the world and America is going to head if we continue to follow down this road. So we need to go ahead and just keep going like we're going. Let God take care of it. In fact, to me, it's a little bit presumptuous, and again, trying to replace with God with human wisdom. Do you really think, let me just ask this question. I'm a pretty simple person, okay? And I try to stay out of too deep of thought and everything. But have you ever not thought that God is in control of what's going to happen to the world? In other words, I always say it this way. All of a sudden, the world, you know, humans through environmental issues and so forth, we destroyed the world. And all of a sudden, I can see God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit saying to each other, whoa, didn't see that coming. How'd they do that? Which one of you was asleep when they pulled this off? You get what I'm saying? In other words, if God says the earth is going to end a certain way at a certain point and Jesus is coming back, then we can't do anything to change that, right? So why all of a sudden are we under the assumption that we have the power to destroy the world? We don't have the power to destroy the world. Bible says God will destroy the world, and he will build a new world, a new heaven and a new earth. So if you don't believe, okay, then you just go on believing and think that man has control and, you know, he's the master. It, like Invictus, the poem that I had to learn in pledging a fraternity, that I am the master of my fate, I am the captain of my soul. And that Invictus poem has infected so many people in the world, because that is exactly where we are today. People thinking they have the power to either maintain or to destroy the earth. And that I don't believe we have that power. I'm sorry, we just don't have that power as much as some people would like to. So anyway, getting back to the whole thing of Bill and Melinda Gates and all these other people that are so for pushing the vaccine. Like I said, for elderly people who are the main ones at risk anyway, then okay, you know, go ahead and get it. If you feel free and you feel it will protect you and so forth, I encourage you to go get it. I'm not telling you don't get it. I'm just saying, you know, it's not something high on my list. Oh, by the way, I just also came across an article that says, despite the COVID-19 vaccines, nursing homes are struggling now with outbreaks. The CDC has warned that low rates of vaccination among health workers in skilled nursing facilities raises the risk of outbreaks. I think that's, again, just a thing of you've got a target group of people. Now, let me ask you this. If these seniors and these elderly people are vaccinated, then should it matter whether the workers are vaccinated or not? I don't think so. I don't think it should matter one way or another. If you're vaccinated, then you're supposed to generally, like if you have the flu shot and you're basically immune, then you're supposed to not get it from anybody. So if the seniors in the nursing homes have been vaccinated, whether the workers get them or not, shouldn't it? By the way, which brings up another point. So many health workers, nurses included, in fact, there are nurses and doctors in Houston that are suing over the mandate to have to get vaccinated. So if your health community is not wanting to get vaccinated, what does that tell you? Does that not make you a little bit suspicious that maybe I will just wait? Maybe I will just wait. So anyway, I don't want to beat a dead horse. I'm just saying there's a bigger issue here, and I wouldn't be so quick to jump on the bandwagon that you must get your shot. your immunization is what I think I'm trying to say, or your inoculation. You know, those big words. I have kind of a hard time with some of those big words. But anyway, no, seriously though, whether you get inoculated or not is not going to determine whether you're a good person or a bad person. It's just you have free will, and you've decided to or not to, and that's all there is. Now, there's certain jobs, there's certain positions where you have to get inoculated. So if you have one of those jobs, I wouldn't feel guilty. I wouldn't say, oh, I'm going to hell because I got my COVID shots. But at the same time, I would also say I'm not going to hell because I didn't get my COVID shot, okay? So anyway, I'll leave that there. One more little quick ditty here in the first half. Oh, thank God the Lakers have been eliminated. And listen, I don't have anything against the Lakers, but the king, the self-appointed king, LeBron James, has been booted out of the NBA playoffs. LeBron James' season has come to an end after losing to the Phoenix Suns 113-100. I mean, that's a pretty bad loss in the NBA. You know, usually it should be a 2-point, 3-point loss, maybe within five. But this is a 13-point loss. Anyway, they lost Thursday night, despite the fact that the Lakers entered the season with all of the hype in the world and viewed as the favorite to win the title. LeBron and company didn't even make it out of the first round after dropping six games. In fact, they couldn't even force the series into seven games. The best player in the world, so-called, didn't survive the first round and couldn't even force a full series. It's pathetic and humiliating. You just hate to see that happen. Yeah, right. By the way, as far as the best players in the world, to me, it's a toss-up. I think, if I'm honest, I probably do have to say Michael Jordan is the greatest player ever, okay? Yeah, I'm going to admit it. Michael Jordan was the greatest basketball player ever. But my favorite player and the guy that I think created Michael Jordan, created LeBron James, he was a hero, and he was at one time the man, and that was Julius Dr. J. Irving. I remember as a freshman in college, back in those days, we didn't have TVs in our rooms. We had segregated rooms, not racially segregated male and female. In fact, we had segregated dorms, and if I wanted to pick up a date or meet a girl at her dorm or vice versa, I had to wait downstairs, and they had a whole bank of phones on the wall, and you would go and you would call the room and ask, are you ready? And then you had to wait until the girl came down. Well, anyway, then they would have like a common area with TV rooms, and you had the cafeteria, and then you had a TV room on the side. So anyway, I remember watching the ABA NBA All-Star Game, the very first one. By the way, for those of you that aren't old enough to know this, you used to have two basketball leagues. You had the NBA, the National Basketball League, and then the ABA, the American. It was just like the NFL and the AFL, American Football League, National Football, and they merged, and then, of course, basketball leagues merged also. And the ABA, it was really funny. They had a red, white, and blue ball. It was a patriotic basketball. And it looked weird because of those stripes. It made the ball always look weird when it would turn. And it just didn't look right. It looked like it was in slow motion or something. I think those that remember will remember what that looked like. It kind of almost looked like they were playing with a beach ball. But it would just act weird. But anyway, they sure knew how to shoot it and still do stuff. Well, Julius Irving came along out of the University of Massachusetts, and he just revolutionized the game. And he would dunk like nobody's business. But he had dunks that nobody had ever seen before, and it was that Statue of Liberty dunk. So I'm watching this NBA-ABA All-Star game. I think it was 1970, the spring of 1970. And Julius takes the ball, and he takes off going down, and he hits the free throw line, goes up in the air with that Statue of Liberty, just holding that ball like a torch in the air. He floats through the air all the way to the rim and, boom, slams it through. And it was amazing because the crowd, the broadcasters, everyone just went silent, dead silent. They couldn't believe it. And then finally went, did you just see what I said? Did we really see that? And so through the rest of the night, no matter what happened in the game, they kept going back and playing a highlight of that game. And anyway, so therefore, I think Julius, in one sense, is the greatest or one of the greatest players ever, because he essentially, to me, revolutionized the sport and gave us Michael Jordan and LeBron James and all of those others. But getting back to LeBron, not only did LeBron lose in six games, but he then continued his cowardly ways by walking off the court without shaking hands. Yes, after losing, LeBron couldn't even bring himself to be a man and congratulate the Suns on the series. Wow. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break, give you an opportunity to hit the bathroom, go get something to drink. I know it's only been about, what, 15, 16 minutes? Oh, 20 minutes. Wow, time flies. Anyway, we'll be back in a minute or so. And we hope you're enjoying. This is Fresh Black Coffee with Eddie Huff. All right, we're back for the second half of this week's episode of Fresh Black Coffee. I'm trying to keep these short right now, so to keep you from getting bored, and also hit you with some news that you may or may not have heard. You know, what they call the intelligentsia or the academic world, I think they've just lost their cotton picking minds. I mean, seriously, they've gone nuts and for people to pay for their kids to go to some of these institutions, particularly you take Harvard and Yale, Princeton, they have some of the stupidest so-called PhDs. PhD is probably correct. Like I call it phony doctors. You know, they're phony instead of doctors of philosophy. They're doctors of phony. It's like ridiculous. Some of the things that you hear. So here's one. The heading of this is a psychiatrist fantasized about shooting white people. Okay, now just think of this. Think of this. This is a professor at Yale University. And apologies. She's not a professor there. She gave a lecture. She's a psychiatrist, which is psychiatrist. Let me let you in on a little secret. A great number of psychiatrists and psychologists are just nuts. Seriously, they're nuts themselves. They need to treat them. You know, what did Jesus say? Physician, heal thyself. They need to heal themselves. Anyway, at Yale University lecture, in a Yale University lecture, a psychiatrist said she fantasized about shooting white people. Can you believe that? A lecture at Yale University on April 6th, a psychiatrist fantasized about shooting white people. Now, just imagine if we reverse that. At Yale University, oh, no, let's not use Yale. Let's use OU, OSU. Let's pick one that's considered not so liberal, not so, you know, progressive, okay? Let's take Texas A&M. That's a good one. Texas A&M, the Aggies, right? You got Texas A&M, Texas Tech, OSU, other schools like that. Liberty, let's say Liberty University. That's one people like to pick on. So anyway, imagine if somebody spoke there and said they fantasized about shooting black people. I just fantasize about shooting black people. Oh, my goodness. It would be all over the news. Everybody would be going nuts. They'd be banned, barred, and probably incarcerated for hate crime, thinking of hate crimes. The thought police would be all over them. But Dr. Aruna Kilanani, they're K-H-I-L-A-N-A-N-I, Dr. Aruna Kilanani, a forensic psychiatrist, she's not just a psychiatrist, she's a forensic psychiatrist and psychoanalyst. She gave a lecture at Yale titled, "The Psychopathic Problem of the White Mind," about the ways in which violence and racism have been psychologically embedded in white people since colonial times, according to Common Sense with Barry Weiss. Okay, this brings me to something else I've often thought of. According to black people, I mean, if you buy this stuff, okay, all white people think about all day from the time they wake up in the morning till they lay their heads down at night is how can we screw over black people? I don't have to get a job. I don't have to go to work. I don't have to feed my kids. I don't have to worry about paying my bills. I don't have to worry about, am I going to be able to afford my mortgage? Do I have life insurance? Do I not have life insurance? Is the world going to end tomorrow? Is an asteroid going to hit us? Are there really UFOs? None of those things. None of that matters. Are we worried about at all about illegal immigration? No, they don't think about it. Apparently, we don't have time to think about that because our well, not our, but the psychopathic white mind, all they think about is how can we screw over black people? At least, that's the least, if not kill them and wipe them off the face of the earth. Oh, my goodness. Since colonial times. Okay, now here's the funny thing about it, okay? In colonial times, how many black people were there? Think about it a second. How many black people were in America in colonial times? Not very many, okay? They came along after 1619. By the way, I'm going to plug my book. It's called Y'all Have Sinned. Y'all Have Sinned is the name of the book. Anyway, and it should be out, hopefully. Lord, I pray you get it out in the next month or so. But anyway, my book, Y'all Have Sinned, is coming out. And I talk about this on this whole 1619 thing. There were no slaves on that ship. Let me put it this way. They had been slaves, but then a pirate ship took over that ship and brought those slaves to America, where they became indentured servants. Okay? So you've got indentured servants. Now, for those of you that don't know the difference in a slave and indentured servant, indenture means there's a period of time that you sell your services to somebody else for room and board. You don't get paid, but you get to eat and a place to sleep. And generally, it's anywhere from 6 to 10 years, okay? So these slaves, these people were headed for Central America. They were going to Central America. Pirate ship got them. Instead, they brought them to America, and they sold them as indentured servants. On that ship was one indentured servant, and this was the first group in 1619 that the whole 1619 project is named after. One of those indentured servants, a black man — they weren't all black, there were whites in the group also — but one of those black people became an indentured servant in Virginia. Now, remember, 1619, slavery was illegal in Virginia until the 1650s. So this indentured servant ended up doing his term. He then bought his own indentured servant. Okay, get this now. There's a black guy, indentured servant, gets free, gets some land, buys his own indentured servants, black and white, black and white. One of those indentured servants felt he had served his time, and so he decided he wanted to go to work for a neighboring farm. He goes to the neighboring farmer, and the farmer says, "Yes, your indenture's over, good to go. Yes, I'll hire you." Well, the black guy who originally had the indenture said, nope, he took him to court. He took the neighbor to court, the white neighbor to court. Black man takes white guy to court. Initially, he lost his case, and he had to free his servant. Of course, then he appealed it. He appealed it, and in the appeal, the white neighbor had to not only give up the indentured servant back to the original guy, who, again, a black man, but he had to pay him restitution for basically stealing his servant. And the punishment for the indentured black servant was lifetime of slavery to this guy. So if you ever want to know who was really responsible for slavery in the Commonwealth of Virginia, which actually then set the case for the entire nation and the entire South, it was the state of Virginia in that case. I'm not going to give you — you'll have to get my book or look it up yourself, okay? That's a little tease there. You can look it up. It's true. It's all true. And it's one of those things that nobody wants to talk about, just like the Tulsa race riot, the fact that black men with guns went downtown to protect a young man that had been incarcerated, and the white people got it uptight because the black man came with guns, and it started the whole Tulsa race riot, where white people rioted, by the way, not black people, white people rioted, and they burnt down a part of North Tulsa, a large chunk of it back then. Anyway, so I diverged from my initial story here about Dr. Aruna Kilanani, forensic psychiatrist and psychoanalyst. I want to call her forensic psychopath, actually, is what I, for short. And her speech was the psychopathic problem of the white mind. Anyway, this is how she goes on. I had fantasies of unloading a revolver into the head of any white person that got in my way, burying their body and wiping my bloody hands as I walked away, relatively guiltless with a bounce in my step, like I did the world an effing favor. Okay. Just imagine again. Flip the script. White person says, I had fantasies of unloading my revolver into the head of any black person that got in my way, or Asian, because Asians are the color of the day that everybody wants to feel sorry for. And I do feel badly about these Asians being accosted. The untold story, though, they're being accosted by black people. It's not white people attacking Asians. It's black people kicking old women on the street. You've seen that video. Guy knocks an older lady down, older Asian lady, and just starts kicking her. And you got these guys inside a store looking or a hotel looking out watching. Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's horrible. But it's happening all over. Asians are being, particularly elderly Asians, are being picked on by black people. Not white people. White people don't care. And then they try to make this Nashville shooting a racial thing, a hate crime, because some of the people, it was in a massage parlor. It was an Asian massage parlor, and it was a white guy that did it. But they didn't happen to mention on most of the media that he did it because he had a sexual addiction, and blamed these ladies for his sexual addiction, other than the fact he was just a nut. Okay. So anyway, let me get back. I keep digressing from this story. We left it when Dr. Kalani said that she felt like she was doing the world an effing favor, guiltless with a bounce in her step after shooting every white person that got in her way. She goes on to say, violence is a part of white people's identities, and they continually identify themselves as superheroes to justify their actions. The psychiatrist claimed people of color are asking a demented, violent predator who thinks they are a saint or a superhero to accept responsibility. White people have been out of their minds since Western colonialism was the worst. I mean, it was the worst violence the world has ever seen. So white people have been out of their minds since Western colonialism. So when we colonized the states in America, at that point, that's the worst violence the world has ever seen. Yeah, right. Somebody needs to revoke her phony doctorate, her PhD, her phony doctorate, because that's not the worst violence the world has ever seen. Okay. I like to tell people about AD 70, when the Emperor Titus razed, R-A-Z-D, Jerusalem and wiped out an entire nation of Israel. Just wiped them out. Not only that, you have cases of Rome doing that everywhere, just totally wiping out people, the Greeks. Then you had the Huns and the Goths and Visigoths and all these other people that would go in. Total brutality. Oh, let me, Dr. Kilanani, let's talk about Shaka Zulu, who's probably one of your heroes. I don't know how many of you have heard about Shaka Zulu. He was a Zulu guy who became this king, and he ended up with an army of several hundred thousand people. But what they don't tell you is how he got that army. He started in Central Africa and would go from village to village killing everybody or subjecting them. So you can die or you can join my army. Well, what are you going to do? You want to die or you want to join me? Oh, I think we'll join you. Next village, boom, 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 killing, massacring, massacring, massacring. One of the blood, probably the, to me, other than maybe Pot Paul and the Viet Cong after the Vietnamese War and the atrocities they committed there in their own countries, probably Shaka Zulu is probably the worst that I've ever come across. He killed hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Africans. Africans. Oh, I'm sorry. But anyway, this nut she's got me a little bit upset here. Anyway, so she still thinks that white people are violent predators. and that we've been out of our minds since, I keep saying we. It's funny how I identify. Even though I grew up in the inner city of Philadelphia, was in gangs, black fraternity, vice president of my black student union. I think I've associated, maybe I'm one of those people she's talking about. I think I've, what's that thing, the Stockholm syndrome? I've been persecuted so badly by white people that I no longer hate my oppressor. Maybe that's what it is. I'm identifying with America as though I were white. Oh, how dare me? How dare me think that I'm free and can think like that in America? That shows how bad, how evil you white people are out there that are listening to this. Anyway, oh my goodness. So anyway, she just basically said that white people like to call themselves the superheroes of the world. They started this lie to justify their violence. White people are out of their minds, and they have been for a long time. Doctor, I think you need to look at the woman in the mirror. Yeah, yeah, it's you. It's you, lady. All right, my last thing here, and this is dealing with socialism, okay? I'm sure all of us can feel it, that we're on the march to socialism. And there are three types of people in the world right now, and particularly in America. And those who welcome socialism, that's number one. Those that are pushing for it, you got AOC and the squad. They think somehow that it's going to be a good thing. You got those, and she's the one, and of course, those behind it, which are a step above the AOCs, those are, I would say, maybe George Soros and others. And oh, this is the thing, I think I may have mentioned it in my last broadcast, I don't know, but I talk about this all the time. What happened to the communists at the fall of the wall? 1987, the Iron Curtain fell, the Berlin Wall fell. All of a sudden, Eastern Europe was no longer Eastern Europe. It joined the rest of Europe. And they became free. Well, what happened to all the communists? I like to ask, were they raptured? Did Jesus, did the communist Jesus come and rapt call them all up and they were caught away? No, they went underground. Where did they come? Right here. To U.S. of A. They're in our educational system. They're now in our government. They're in our military. And they are beginning to deteriorate our nation from within. Think about it. Where did they go? Okay, where did they go? Did they really disappear? No. No, they did not. And they're behind all of this stuff. All right. So anyway, those are the ones who are behind it. And there are those who think it's going to benefit them. Your lower, certain people in power, again, AOC and those. And then the lower classes who welcome the free things for no work. Oh yeah, keep sending me these COVID checks. Keep sending me, extend my unemployment benefits. Give me child money. Give me educational money, free education. The more kids I have, the more money I can get. Make us lazier and lazier. So anyway, you've got those people. And then, like I said, you've got those who don't think it's a problem. A little socialism, it's probably good for it. The government should help the poor. Yeah, and we're American socialism. We're in America, and socialism can never win here. But Christians and pastors tend to often fall into that category. That we're in America, it can't ever really survive here. You know, Jesus won't let it happen. God won't let it happen. You know, all we have to do is keep focused on evangelism and things will straighten out. I'm sorry, brother, sister, whoever you are. It doesn't work that way. If that were the case, he wouldn't have needed the disciples. We wouldn't have had to have evangelism and church people all over the world, people sacrificing themselves, martyring themselves, because you cannot separate government from people's faith. And the people of faith have to affect the government. If they don't, the government will affect the people of faith. And so, yeah, you need to rethink all of that. There are a lot of those who try to use scripture to support the socialism. They use the Beatitudes, blessed are the poor, you know. And then, of course, you got Acts 4, there was not a needy person among them, for all who were owners of land, houses, sold them and brought them and the proceeds and laid them at the apostles' feet. Yeah, they did. But it was an individual thing. It was voluntary. they did it on their own. They weren't forced to by the government. And it wasn't the government. It was the apostles. It was the church that basically wanted to take care of the poor. And who did they want to take care of? Now, this is the other thing that people miss. It was to take care of the Christians, because the Christians were being persecuted. So a lot of them couldn't get jobs, couldn't work. So they had to be taken care of by their body. That wasn't talking about just anybody and everybody. It was talking about the church. In fact, Paul, remember when he went around, he was collecting money for the church at Corinth and for the poor. He was doing that to support the church, the Christians. And this is one of the sad things about the world today. Even in America, even in the black community, after emancipation, probably during slavery days, we were a community. We were a community, and that means we took care of each other. We saw somebody that needed food. Let's say a sister was sick, okay, a lady in the neighborhood. What did we do? Church ladies got together. Oh, sister so-and-so is sick. She needs help. Well, let's cook, man. They'd start bringing that food over, you know, and, oh, thank you, sister so-and-so. Thank you, sister. Oh, thank you so much. They would watch the kids. They would help raise the kids. If your kids got in trouble, neighbors were able to discipline them. They were able to watch them. And if they needed money, if they needed a job, they did it. It was within the church. It was within the church, not the government. The church today has abdicated that. Just this week, we had a story about AOC. She has an abuela, her grandmother, in Puerto Rico. And she showed photos of her grandmother's house, which is still in ruin or in bad shape because of the hurricane that was there a few years ago. Of course, that's Trump's fault, right? AOC has enough money, she could build her abuela a new home. She could renovate her abuela's house. But no, that's not my job. That's the government's job. Y'all do it. Let me continue to live in Manhattan, have a nice apartment here and another house and a vacation house and this car and that car and do this and this and then make all the money in the world on the nation's dime, taxpayers' money. See, this is the hypocrisy of this. And those, we know we're always going to have those people, charlatans, hypocrites, liars, stealers. Okay. What's bad is those who sit there and accept this and listen to this crap. That's what's bad. And that's what has, I mean, somebody needs to stop, say, wait, time out. Hold, stop, stop it, stop it. Now, fortunately, you do have good people on Twitter and different social media that are calling this out. They're calling BS on her. But that's what's got to happen. The church, I can't let them off the hook. If your church is like mine, listen, I think I've got a great pastor, great message, great preacher. I mean, he really has the right heart. It's just misguided. For example, everything is so off. And I'm not just picking on my pastor, my church. Don't get that. I'm talking about the true evangelical, God-fearing church. We're so busy about building our church and everything we're doing. I like to call it fixing up the living room while the house is on fire. We're renovating the living room while the house is on fire. So, you know, you got a house where we're busy, you know, fixer upper, the show Fixer Upper would say, you know, well, we're going to open this up. We're going to have nice curb appeal. We've got this. We've got that. You know, we got that open concept. All this stuff that makes the house look. And, you know, Joanna Gaines really knows how to fix up a house. I got to give it to her. Lady's gifted. Anyway, so you've got that. Well, you got pastors doing that. We're opening it up. We're giving us good curb appeal. You know, everyone will want to come to our church. Look at everything we're doing. We're doing. And it's all out. While you've got people in the body that are hurting. You know, if the church would begin doing the work of feeding the poor and hungry and the people in their own bodies, people would come to that. It would be drawn to that. But instead, we're trying to go out and do this. Strangers. I could tell you some horror stories I've seen of that type of thing, what it's done, not helped anyone. So we have people within our own bodies. And so you've got people that are hurting, and they're afraid to share. They're afraid to share because too often the church isn't there. The family's not there. You know, it used to be the circle was like this. Parents raise their children. When the parents get old, the children take care of the parents. If you have a sibling that's injured, has a mental condition or a physical handicap condition, the family took care of that sibling. The brothers and sisters circled around and took care of them. They invested their money. If someone down the street was hurting, the neighbors would get together. We knew each other. We knew when we had problems. We knew when we had issues. We got involved in a good way, not gossiping and just talking about them or, oh, God bless them, or oh, I feel so bad for them. No, we actually stepped in. What can we do, sister, brother? Then, so you got the neighborhood, okay? So you got the church and to me, the circle should be the family first, church is second, neighborhood's third. If we did that, we wouldn't need welfare. We would not need welfare. And we would be in a lot better shape than we are. That's the way it used to be, people. That's the way it used to be. Anyway, that's going to do it for another issue, another week of fresh black coffee. Smack, smack. Hopefully it smells good and it'll wake some people up. Hey, thank you again so much for joining us this week. And we look forward to being with you again next week. I want to thank my young assistant, Julian. And God bless you, everybody. Talk to you later.